Good morning. It's October the 28th. This is No Filter Sports, nofiltersportspodcast.com. This is not Eli Zarrett talking. I'm Mark Feller.
Yeah, I'm thinking to myself already, this guy's got a much better voice than the regular host of this show. What's going on?
I don't know. It's crazy. You got to fill in when someone has to take a very important business trip to the East Coast.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, Eli's in the bathroom. He'll be a while.
Yeah, until Thursday.
By the way, Mark's a little tense today. He's a little nervous, as he should be with three such august personalities. His name is Mark Fellhauer.
Yes.
And folks know him from the Drew and Mike show.
Yeah, and that is Bob Page via Skype. Danny McLean sitting across from me and Eli somewhere on the phone from said business trip. Nicholas Lidstrom coming up later in the podcast. He's got a new book out, The Pursuit of Perfection. A lot of football to talk about. Lions, Michigan, Michigan State. But, of course, how do you guys not start by talking about the World Series last night?
No. We talk about Morgana first.
And that's Sunday night, by the way, Mark. As this thing goes out, who knows
right.
when people listen
well,
to it.
Well, Morgana, there was a lady, a woman by the name of Morgana.
The
Kissing Bandit. Who used to make the rounds in Major League Baseball, football, basketball. It didn't make any difference what sport it was. In fact, I don't even think he had to be a sport.
And the reason this came up is because once the game was well in hand last night, in about the seventh or eighth inning, there were two very attractive women who decided to flash the TV camera while they're pitching.
And what they flashed, Mark, is their surgery. That's what they were flashing. Am I right?
It was a very successful surgery. I'm glad they had it done.
They paid a lot of money for
those. Enjoyed it. And the one girl is one of those influencers on Instagram, and so she put it up there. And I got a letter in the mail from Major League Baseball saying, you are no longer allowed to ever go to a baseball game again, which I'm sure she was okay with the price because of the publicity. But the first thing that popped in my head is Morgana the Kissing Bandit and Denny, they had to have crossed paths at some point.
Well, we did cross paths. We crossed paths in Washington when I got to Washington. I guess she lived outside Washington because that's where most of her events took place. And she started walking out. Keep one thing in mind. She didn't mix into the crowd in Washington because, we always had 11 or 12 people there for every game, whether we wanted them people there or not. So she was very well. She stood out in more ways than one.
Oh, yeah.
And so she walked out with all of her events in place and come up and she says, I want to do something to you. And I said, well, Morgana, where are we going?
What did she want to do
to
you?
And I said, where are we going?
Was it on the mound? Is this where it was?
No, I was hitting. I was going to hit.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? She shook me up so bad, I struck out.
You struck out in a Major League Baseball game? No.
Not only that, but in more ways than one, if you can follow that.
Well, she was the one who offered to do something to
Well, she gave me a kiss on the cheek. That's all it was, a kiss on the cheek. And I turned at the last second because I didn't know where her lips were before she came out the home plate. So,
hey, if you guys don't know about this, you go to Google and type in something like topless girl at Florida Panthers game. Because a number of years ago, have you seen that?
I've seen
the
her,
most amazing feminine pulchritude, all real, really? That I've ever seen. She just took her top off sitting up against the glass at a Panthers game. You really should check that out.
You mean to tell me she just sat there?
Well, no, she flashed whoever was on the ice. She wanted to
But she put her shirt back on, didn't she?
You guys are avoiding the big question.
Yes.
The big question.
What
Morgana,
is it?
Morgana was in the 70s.
Yeah.
This is the pre-silicone era now where every woman at the club who's like 5'7", 98 pounds with and half of it is her boobs. Was Morgana real? Because she was a look that we didn't see every day. We didn't see online every day. She was massive.
Massive is the appropriate word because she was huge.
And guys, do you remember the National League umpire Dick Stello and whom he married? He married Chesty Morgan.
Oh, that's right.
Remember Chesty Morgan, who was in right. competition for Morgana?
You know, how do you go from home plate to Chesty Morgan? Huh? How do
know.
You?
We don't talk about the World Series. Oh, Mark started it, didn't he, with it?
It's just one of the first things I thought of because, to me, the game got a little boring, personally. I don't know what you guys thought
of. Not if you bet on the right team.
Well, of course. I mean, the game's never boring when you have some action going on.
Of course, I didn't.
But, there's this weird anomaly where the road team has won the first five games. The last time it happened was in 96, and then before that was an era, even well before Denny. No one remembers it. And each of the home teams won game six. So I kind of feel like, in essence, is this series over? Is it done?
Well, the series could be over. Scherzer, I'm going to say something about Scherzer, and people aren't going to believe this. I believe he's got a little Integrity problem may not be the right word. But you know what? 6-7 years ago when Jimmy Leland was the manager, he, with a 3-1 lead, he had just struck out three guys in a row. He had 12 strikeouts through six innings, and he asked to be taken out of the game. He said he was done. The whole world revolted. I mean, we all screamed and hollered, what the hell is wrong with him? We all thought he was hurt. He wasn't hurt. He said he was tired. And I suppose it could be interpreted as a big, fat gag. And I think, based upon what happened yesterday, listen, I got more cortisone shots than most people will ever think about getting in your life. And I'm telling you what, one cortisone shot and a couple of pops of Xylocaine, and you can pitch.
You know, you're big on this stuff. You used to say the same thing about Earl Wilson. You know, he always wanted to come in after six innings. How does a guy like Scherzer, 35 years
great
old,
question.
All the innings he's pitched, all the seasons he's been in, all the games he's won, as hard as he pitches, as hard as he throws, how can you accuse him of being a pansy?
That's a good question.
It's a great question, but let me say this yet. This is the World Series. This is just not another game. This is the biggest game he was going to pitch this year.
He doesn't have the guts to take the ball, is what you're saying.
Based upon his history with Jim, I suppose that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm thinking.
Look, Denny,
you got to go out. Listen, when it's your turn, you take your turn. You got to take them out. And you got to win it for the Gipper.
Up, they said he was in so much pain.
I don't believe that. You don't believe it either.
If he goes out there hurt and he's got the trapezius and his neck and he compromises his team to take the ball, you'd say the exact opposite. If you're hurt and you can't pitch the way you shouldn't have played. You should let somebody else do it.
Maybe, absolutely.
I'm not saying you're wrong, Danny, but I think that's when you look at a guy like Max Scherzer, you're going to accuse him of not wanting to take the ball in a big game. I just got to say, listen, you were tough. You pitched hurt. Nobody did more to get out on the mound than you did when your arm and your body was in pain and told you not to. That doesn't mean, though, that everybody is a pussy compared to you.
But he comes out with back spasms and extensions in his neck, they say. My point is, what's he do? What's he sleep in, a shoebox? I mean, I don't get it. This guy should have $1 million bed, for God's sakes, the greatest bed in the world to keep him in the appropriate position as he sleeps, and he comes out with a bad neck and a bad back. I'm sorry.
It sets up, though, an incredible Game 6.
Sure
where
does.
You got Verlander, who has never, I guess he's 0-5 career World
yes,
Series.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So now it's all on the line. He's at home in front of his crowd with Steven Strasburg. They can win that game, and then you got Scherzer coming back from Game 7. Just goes to show, you never know. You don't really know. I'm not saying you're wrong or I'm right, but it's almost the same with Michigan. Did we know?
Well, great one.
Is the team we saw Saturday night the same team?
Great
that,
one.
That laid an egg against Wisconsin? No.
It's great. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
If, in fact, he's hurting this bad with back spasms and extensions in his neck and whatever the hell else, how can they make the statement that he will definitely pitch Game 7?
They didn't say that. They said they hope.
Excuse me. Of the next two games, the pitcher would definitely start if there's a Game 7. And that's from the manager, Martinez.
Let me ask you a question, Danny. All the huge games you pitched in your career, you're talking about this macho bravado stuff here.
No, I'm not. The deal
is, aren't you much better telling your manager, I'm done, I'm shot, or I'm hurt, than hurting your team if you go ahead and pitch or stay in?
You know,
and letting the manager make a decision. Here's what I feel. Here's what I think. Here's what the trainer says. What do you want to do? Yes, that would be the mature. That will be what the pro does.
When did they make the decision that he wasn't going to pitch?
When he showed up at the ballpark, or when he called him that morning?
Late Sunday afternoon. Yeah.
So
Danny, answer my question. Aren't you better off begging out of a game when you know you're going to hurt your team?
If it was game number 141 during the regular season, I think you're right. But this game was the most important game. Oh, that's all I'm saying. This is the most important game. You got to give it a shot. That's what I'm saying. Maybe he was hurt as bad as he says, but at least give it a shot.
Yeah, right. Let's give up four runs in the first inning. Hey, I gave it a shot. You know what? I think we should put this one aside because we don't know. Let's see how it plays out. See what happens. We don't know.
I love his description of when he woke up in the morning. He says, I had to fall out of bed and pick myself up with my left arm.
Heading into the series, obviously we know how great the starting pitching is. Has this series become more about the hitting, or is it still about the starting pitching? Because there's been a lot of runs scored. There's been a lot of home runs.
That is hit into left center field. Back at the wall. It is gone. That is hammered into left. It is gone. Alvarez, and now Correa. That is clutched into left. Goodbye. A tape measure home run by George Springer.
Yeah, well, it's not about the pitching. Denny said it would be. I said it wouldn't be because both these teams can really score runs. We've seen that. We've seen that. Now, you know, I think we've seen also more bad baseball. I want to, Denny, you ever seen this before, Eli? Game three, top of the first inning. Springer's on first base, two out, two strikes. He tries to steal. Kurt Suzuki doesn't even throw. Why not? He thought the pitch was a strike. It was high, the replay showed. He just held it to give the umpire a long, better look. You got to come up throwing anyway. You can't assume what the umpire is going to do.
That home plate umpire, that Barksdale guy, right?
Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
Lance
know
Barksdale
where he was.
Terrible. What a bad night.
Well, and they had that same incident, and it was caught on mic about when it was called a ball, probably should have been a strike, and you heard him say, should I have held it there longer? And so, and you know, so Zimmerman walked, and then the next batter, it's another 3-2 pitch, clearly a ball, and they called it a strike. It was a makeup call.
Yeah, that was first. There was a pitch that looked an awful lot like strike three, right, with Correa.
Yeah,
and then in the top of the fourth, and Correa took the next pitch out of the ballpark. And otherwise, it was strike three.
I know you like the human element, but what is so wrong with having the robot umpire just call balls and strikes? I know
you've said they're going to have it, and he says they won't.
It's not time yet. If in fact it's ever time, it's just not. It's time has not come.
And you know, the Fox announcers in their coverage of this game, we saw Gary Cederstrom again in game three. He blew two or three straight ball and strike calls. And you see the replay, and what does Joe Buck always say? Oh, that looked like a pretty good pitch. Yeah. Have some guts, Joe.
Oh, no,
you saw the replay. It was a strike, and the umpire blew the call. Jeez.
You know what? They're all stuck in that position. Every announcer, every play-by-play guy, outside corner, you know, and then the color guy would say, yeah, close, you know, or almost or something. So there's 50 times a game or 30 times a game they got to pretend something happened and it didn't happen instead of just saying, wow,
you know,
that should have been a ball. That should have been a strike.
Yeah, and Eli, keep one thing in mind. And Bob will, I think, confirm this. If the ball just catches any part of the plate, it's a strike.
Yeah.
It's a strike.
Any
and people
part of
don't
the ball.
Realize that because the guy catches the ball out off the plate doesn't mean it's a ball.
That's
well,
true,
you know,
but when you see the computer show a ball clearly not in the zone. And then with the Fox coverage, John Smoltz in the third inning, again, of game three, he's got pitcher Zach Greinke up at the plate, and it's a bunting situation with a runner on third, and Smoltz explains to us, the ignorant audience, what a safety squeeze is. What, do these idiots at Fox presume that nobody's ever seen a baseball game before?
But it is the World Series. There are a lot of people watching that
you
haven't
watched
that
for the first time.
I actually do think so.
Well, I agree with you. There's a lot of people just seeing the game for the first time.
I always hated that about McCarver because he kind of talked down to the audience. But then as I got older, I'm kind of like, you know what? It's okay because he's seeing things a little different. Maybe people don't know the game like I know it.
I would love to put McCarver in the same room with Darrell Evans and see which one runs out of gas first. We would start on Monday, and one of them would last till Thursday.
We'll
or
just
Friday.
Put Dion in the booth, and the McCarver's
done. The other thing about the balls and strikes and the Fox box, when replay shows whether a receiver stepped inbounds or out of bounds, or whether he was on the line or not, it's an exacting thing.
Yes.
But is the Fox box truly accurate? So does it change for each batter?
Of course, it's a computer.
Yeah,
yes,
well, it's accurate.
If it's complete, and also the height of a guy, you know, is it? Do they change the box?
They take that into account.
Yeah.
It should be called automatically.
But shouldn't they? Wouldn't they have to move the computer around a little bit? Listen, you got what's his name with the Yankees? He's 6 foot.
Yeah, that's
10.
It adjusts for
do.
That.
Of course,
how does it adjust? Do you know
so it's
how?
It's a different strike zone for Altuve as opposed to Aaron Judge.
Right.
It's the box bigger small.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It looks like it's just the box.
And besides, it's the perception of it. People are going to believe that box better than, you know, a 60-year-old, 50-year-old guy standing behind a catcher calling
balls and strikes.
You
know what, Mark? You know the analogy I always use with this? Is when there's a discrepancy between you and your bank and your checking account, the bank's got all its computers. Do you think the bank's right? You think you're right. You see, it's about computers. Now, here
agree more.
Fox continues to interview these managers. It is so lame.
Terrible.
After Altuve led off the game Friday night with a double, He races to third on Juan Soto's error, and guess what's going on? They're in the middle of an interview with Dave Martinez, who's trying to watch the game. You know, wouldn't you think Martinez would say, excuse me, guys, I'm working right now. Can I get off the air and stop this stupidity? And what do the managers ever really say anyway? Good heavens.
Nothing. They're not going to give anything away. They're not going to add anything. You know what robot umpires don't need? Good eyesight. How's that for a transition?
What the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about Dr. Yaldo. Great eyesight's a lifestyle gift that we all seek and cherish.
You got to give us a hello or a hi or something when you're going to do these little tricks.
No, Mark is a professional podcaster.
Don't come in here and act like, listen, I know you, Mark. Don't act like a professional now.
Let him do the spot, guys.
I need 20 seconds for Eli to tell me how the clock works down here, and you do it every week? We make sacrifices to try and get great eyesight, like dealing with annoying contacts. I hated that. I've had contacts roll up in my eye. I'm so glad I'm done with them. Yet the only way to have 20/20 near and far vision for life without glasses and contacts is safe, reliable, state-of-the-art procedures from the Yaldo Eye Center. They are Michigan's premier eye clinic. 100 of you are listeners who have had the good sense to get free evaluation from Yaldo. He understands your unique needs. And then you get the procedure that sets you free. That's in all caps, Denny. It sets you free. Custom LASIK offered by Dr. Yaldo. Most precise, giving over half of his patients get better than 20/20. We know that. Eli's always bragging about his eyesight. It's the medical standard for perfect vision. He can get you beyond that. His multifocal lens exchange also eliminates the need for reading glasses. Find out what works for you. Once again, the evaluation is free. The only thing you stand to lose are those contacts and glasses. Give the best and pay the least. Dr. Yaldo will also gladly beat any offer that you may have gotten. Call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES. Or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
Now for our friends at Hall Financial. Hall has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in the year 2019. That's this year. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring they feel like a name and not just a number. What if I told you that Hall Financial will not only walk you through the process of buying your home, but provide you with a top realtor in your area? Who doesn't want that kind of service? Hall Financial knows how to deliver five-star service. That means your schedule, availability at night and on weekends. They're going to work for you, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial. Call them today at 248-308-5000. And if you're looking to purchase or refi, give them a call now. Chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com or give Hall Financial a chance today. They are an equal housing lender, NMLS 146-7435, 248-308-5000.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And I know you guys can hear that.
That was very good. I like that. Very smooth, except Denny's got a frog in his throat.
Well, don't I?
It sounds like it. Was that from screaming yourself hoarse over your beloved Bears choking against the Raiders?
Oh, don't go there. Why the hell can't they get rid of this guy?
Is he on probation, Bob,
with the Bears? Is that what's going on? I can't believe this guy.
Who are you mad at with the Bears? Who exactly?
The kicker. He misses every time the game is in jeopardy.
Pinero.
I got to tell you, they didn't do him any favors yesterday by, you know, setting him up to kick like that.
It was a 41-yard field goal. Okay. Don't even go there.
Knowing his history, why not try to get closer?
Listen, he's got odds on his favor right now. I mean, he misses 7 out of 10, so we figured he's missed a lot the first 7 games. We got a shot for him to make one yesterday.
Was it Parkey, the guy who kept on dinking him off?
Yes,
off
the double goal? Doink. Oh,
it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
But you're kind of bearing the lead, Bob, and that's that the Lions are going to be great again.
What about Patricia? Wasn't she wonderful on Sunday? I knew she'd be wonderful.
Eli, hey, if we don't win a game pretty soon, I'm going to give up gambling.
I'm not a Matt Patricia fan, but I thought the idea on defense was the right thing to do. You stop Saquon Barkley and try to let the rookie pass you to death.
Well, the Giants have no running attack, and Saquon Barkley is not going to even run against a prevent defense. That's how bad the Giants' offensive line is. But Are you saying they didn't beat the spread? They were favored by 6.5, right?
They did not beat the spread. They tried hard to lose that game, but the Giants would not take it from them.
I told you guys the other day that Saquon would be the best player on the field, and he still is. The offensive line of the Giants, especially the right side, hasn't been bad this year, Eli. Nate Solder has been in and out as the left tackle, mm-hmm. but Patricia's a defensive guy. We know that, and I said he was going to scheme for Barkley. What can they do? They can't get the guy to the ball, but don't forget, Daniel Jones threw 4 touchdown passes in that game, too.
Yeah, Slay was out. I mean, I don't know. I just think it was the right game plan for that game. Now, where are we with the Lions?
Well, they called
3-1.
Yeah, and they called a trick play yesterday in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I think that shows a little creativity. You know how many times they ran that play in practice?
Oh, yeah.
How many times?
I would assume they ran it a lot.
How many times?
5?
2.
2? Okay.
So
must have worked both times.
Yeah, must have.
enough to have
I
the
count. I can't get over it. They practiced it twice, ran it, and it worked.
From the 41, on the toss, it goes back from McKissick to Stafford, and now he goes deep for Golladay, touchdown!
But in watching that game, I just had this fear, I think as every Lions fan does, is how are they going to blow this game? And usually, is it going to be Matthew Stafford blowing it? He was damn near, he might have been perfect in the second half.
You know, they're supposed to beat the Giants. The Giants are one of the lower echelon teams. They're supposed to win at home, so it's hard to look too deeply into it. Although the line defense has been surprisingly bad with Patricia being the specialist. The thing, though, is they got to win 7 of their last 9. This is what happens in football. If you do poorly in the beginning of the year, you almost can't recover. They could, the Lions. You look at Michigan, they can't recover. It doesn't matter how well they play. So the Lions at 3-3-1 have to still win 7 of their last 9 to make the playoffs. And that's just a little bit of
but wait a second.
Task.
Look, all of sports is about expectations. I guess if you expect the Lions to make the playoffs, that's their ceiling. I expect them to be a 500 team. So what does that matter? They're only a game and a half out of the wild card because the NFC is so good. I mean, is it that absurd to
You're not suggesting they're going to be in the playoffs.
I think it's a possibility.
I think they got a 15 to 20% chance.
You must have found the stuff Eli hides in this room.
I guess my point being is I know there's a lot of people out there that laugh at us Lions fans about Pitch, but
I'll tell you how much we laugh, Eli. You know how much we laugh. You can't see this, but I can, and Denny can. Fellauer shows up at the show today, not wearing an FL's jersey, has wearing a football jersey.
Yeah.
Chelsea, Chelsea or Arsenal? Then
7
he
wins in a row.
He doesn't even bloody like Detroit Lions.
Hey, 7 wins in a row. That's the only way I could talk about soccer. 7 wins in a row. The American Christian Pulisic gets a hat trick. What's there not to love about that sport? I got to root for some team that has a lion on their logo that wins.
Yeah, that's right. So here's a guy who's not only adopted a team, as I've been suggesting for a lot of years, he's adopted an English football side thing.
Man, I sometime it's going to happen, and I cannot wait until they are, you know, on the level of competing for a Super Bowl, and I hope Bob's alive just so you can eat all the words.
Well, I hope so too.
Bob is a much better imitation than me, but back when the New York Cosmos got Pelé,
yeah.
And I believe it was the North American Soccer League back then,
yep.
Howard Cosell said, soon enough, the Soccer Bowl will be bigger than the Super Bowl. That was one of the great predictions that never happened, obviously.
But since we're on the subject, Mark, I know this is very serious for you. Do you think Queen's Park Rangers have a chance at all against Chelsea this year? And maybe Arsenal might sneak in, right?
Do you want a real answer?
You actually follow this stuff.
I do.
You follow English Premier Soccer.
I do. I follow Premier League and Champions League, a little bit of La Liga. Okay.
But this
you know why, Bob?
Eli.
Because it's all year long. And it's during the day, and it doesn't conflict with any of my other sports. I did catch myself watching the Chelsea game over Ohio State, Wisconsin, which I think was a better choice, which leads to...
Wait. Would you repeat that, please?
What did you say?
I watched Chelsea play soccer at 12:30 over Ohio State, Wisconsin.
You're hanging around with Drew too much.
Good.
I knew it was going to last 2 hours. I knew that, you know, there's no time. You know, there's no Bob's making the worst face right now.
Eli, on behalf of Denny and myself, we really want to thank you for setting up Fellauer to do this show today.
I'm trying to move off of it. But it set up the day for the next two games, the Spartans and Penn State, which what a lovely atmosphere they played, and almost as lovely as at night with Michigan and Notre Dame. And does that huge victory over Notre Dame, which, by the way, the biggest scoring margin over a top 10 team since 1977.
I've never seen Notre Dame get its ass kicked like this.
I haven't either. Never.
And think about this. Think about this also. Now, this is a terrible game. It's 17-0 Michigan at halftime. And what we saw in the third quarter was another horrendous joke of a call by an official who called pass interference against Kalik Hudson when he never touched the Notre Dame wide receiver.
Right.
Now, Michigan should have had that ball, but instead ND kept possession, and they went into score to make it 17-7. This could have been 60-something to nothing if Michigan had wanted it.
But remember, they got that call back on the very next drive in the end zone on a third down play where the guy did not touch DPJ at all.
I thought that was an okay call. I wasn't bitching about that. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a total
marginal
makeup call.
March.
But I guess my question coming out of the game, does it show maybe how overrated Notre Dame was and maybe they're not that good? Or is Michigan just, are they better than we thought they were?
Well, Michigan is certainly not better than we thought they were. That's for sure. Although you would think that they have a little better, more talent than what we assume, because this upsets me a little bit, just a little bit. The way they move these teams around in the rankings, all of a sudden Michigan has moved up five spots. Now they're number 14. Come on, guys. You can't go that far.
It doesn't mean anything.
It does mean something. If they were in the top five or six, it does. Although that's not going to happen.
Does it really matter that LSU jumped Alabama to be number one right now?
Yes, it does.
Down south, it does. Oh, for a week long of bragging rights?
Are you kidding? They kill each other down there.
These are kids, and they're unpredictable. You think this time last week we're talking about the football scoop article, which is Harbaugh's, trying to break away. It's not working here. He's going to go to the pros. Then the other website, the Spun or whatever the hell that is, lists the five coaches that could likely replace him. Now all of a sudden, they're playing as well as we could have hoped for. You look as a whole different. I shouldn't say it. It's not like a homer here. You look at the whole way they could now run the table. You know, they win at Maryland. They're going to pummel State. They face a challenge at Indiana. Perhaps they win that. And then the way they looked the other night and the second half against Penn State, a different team, maybe Gattis is finally figuring it out. And these kids, they go from seeming tentative, they're 4- and 5-star recruits, they're playing terribly, now they're looking like who they are. That offensive line, great 4- and 5-star recruits that hadn't played well, they're closing the edge. This Hassan Haskins, he's a converted linebacker. Yeah. Suddenly he breaks every tackle. You can't bring him down. And they're playing. They pin down on the edges. They open holes in the interior runs. And so, but the problem is, I mean, look, the Washington Nationals were 19-31. Now they're in the World Series. Michigan, it will be forever haunted if they play as well as it looks like they can the rest of the way. They're still going to get shut out because what you do early in the season, you know.
Let's imagine in that horrible monsoon Saturday night at Ann Arbor that the reverse would have happened, that Notre Dame would have killed Michigan. Does Jim Harbaugh then have to beat Ohio State to keep his job? And with this victory over ND, did Jimmy keep his job no matter what happens against Ohio State?
I think he keeps his job. I think he would have kept his job. I think it's his decision anyway. I don't think they would have fired him like this. He's still going to win 8, 9, 10 games.
I agree.
But you know, he's now he's looking like, you know, now that it's all falling into place, now he's the coach that maybe we thought he was going to be. So this is what happens with kids. Listen, I came here to go to the Pitt-Miami game in Pittsburgh because the offensive coordinator is a friend of a friend. And that was game, you know, and what happens in that game? He says, I can't predict what my kids are going to do. They didn't show up that day. They didn't even score a touchdown. And so that was, I thought, was going to be an exciting game. It was a god-awful affair where they don't score any touchdowns. In the Michigan game, which I thought was going to be a rain-soaked, you know, slog, turns out to be this incredible offensive performance. So, you know, this is the manic, depressive nature of sports that plays out most prominently in football. These fortunes and perceptions can shift on a dime. Again, we go from Harbaugh being fired to leave on his own. Now it's morphed into, if only they could have played better in the first half at Penn State, and now we see the Michigan team that was predicted in the Big Ten.
And I'm still telling you this. He's not going to get fired.
No.
He's not going to get fired.
Well, the reason those articles exist is because people click on that because it's Harbaugh and Michigan.
Let me finish. Right. But running this football team and managing this football team is not having Shea Patterson only throw 12 passes in four quarters. You got to let this kid throw the ball.
Well, for Christ's sake,
that's what won them the game, though.
It's not the point. You got to let the kid throw.
That's what won them.
Everybody tells me that he can throw the ball 80 yards, 90 yards. Let him throw the ball.
Wait, Notre Dame lost that game because they threw the ball almost as much as they ran it in the first quarter. Now, maybe some of that's because
Listen,
they got down.
This isn't something
early.
That just happened the other day. This has happened every game.
Oh, I know. I think before that game, they were number 70 for run play selection. That's pretty much in the middle. Do I wish they passed more? Yeah. Yeah, I think they will. I think that's coming. I think.
And if Haskins can run for 149 yards, give him the ball every time.
To the point of... coaches being on the
Why
hot
not?
Seat, I am utterly amazed, and I don't know if you guys are amazed, that Michigan State is pretty much trying to run out the best coach they've ever had in the history of that school with D'Antonio. The noise about him losing his job.
I don't agree with that. Well, I don't agree with that
You're
at
wrong.
All. If you
You're
saw the Michigan State
wrong.
Game... If you saw the Michigan State game, you saw fan apathy. Yeah. They had a pretty good crowd to start. There were no boos directed toward D'Antonio. They know this is not a good club. D'Antonio has health issues. He's got legal issues. I think everybody assumes that Mark's going to quit. They're not going to fire him unless the legal issues are worse than we thought. By the end of that game, of course, I stayed till the bitter end. I'd never seen fewer people in Spartan Stadium in my life.
Yeah.
They don't care. They don't care.
Do you think he should be the coach there next year?
That depends on the legal issues, doesn't it?
The legal issues are what this is all about. You know, I mean, he's got he had something going on with the president of the university, mm-hmm. and apparently somebody, while reading depositions, found some real serious conflict.
I got to tell you, though, the deposition, are you talking about the former coach that got fired, his deposition? I can't
We're talking about, it's the same thing as Watergate. What did he know and when did he know
exactly
it about
right.
those three Michigan State football players who were accused of a gang rape?
Yeah.
You know, and D'Antonio said, well, hey, it's not on me. They got rid of the kids. Yeah. They got them out of the program. And Mark said, I didn't know anything about it. Word now, apparently, is that he did. And he's got 7 hours worth of deposition coming in the offseason to discuss that.
It's very akin. It's not the crime. I don't think it's as bad, but it's Paterno covering up for Sandusky.
No.
It's not as bad
no.
as that crime, but you don't think it's similar the way they covered it up?
A cover up is a cover
up. We're going to find out.
A cover up is a cover up.
I think the bottom line in all of it is that there comes a time to go, and I think that it just seems that it's been talking behind the scenes for a long time.
Right.
This is just the time for D'Antonio to go. He had some great runs there, you know, when they played in the Final Four, and it's just enough. And didn't he hint in the beginning of the year there was some comment he made post game? Well, sometimes, you know, you forget stuff or it slipped my mind. So, you know, it's like Chuck Daly said after 9 years, you know, at a certain point, either stop listening or it's just time to move on. And that's the sense you get with D'Antonio.
I just hope they don't forget about what he did for that program.
Well, and the kinds of it really doesn't make a lot of difference. Look what they did to Paterno. Look what he did for that program. And they ran him out of Dodge quick. They really did. Once they found out that he had been talking to people all along and been being told of what this Sandusky, what this guy was doing, I mean, God almighty, he moved out so quick. It was incredible.
Then the
poor guy died.
Maybe these coaches will learn not to cover for crimes.
Right. Now, here's my problem, boys, with what happened against Penn State on Saturday. We didn't figure Michigan State would win. But this is a three-score game in the third quarter, and what happens? He puts Rocky Lombardi in.
Yeah.
He takes Lewerke out. Then in the fourth quarter, Rocky can't play, and I've said this all along, he puts third stringer Theo Day in, and then later on, goes back to Lewerke. And even the announcer, even Todd Blackledge, was saying, did D'Antonio quit on this game? And afterwards, D'Antonio says, and I quote at his news conference, you can't abandon ship right now. You just can't. He did. He did in that game.
It almost seemed like it was panic. Like, what else can we do here for the rest of the year?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I wish they'd keep him forever. And if he does leave Michigan State, you know what he should leave in, Denny?
But wait, before you go there, before you go to Eli's car,
you're ruining my setup.
I'm not. you got to give us a high five or something. You know, at least Eli knows. You know, well, I take
here's
that
the clock. Out. Look at this clock. There you go.
It's a beautiful clock.
Will you leave Fellauer alone? Aside from the English football stupidity,
Denny,
he's doing very well.
He is sitting in front of you. He picks up the copy. He looks at the copy. You can see what he's doing, and you say you don't know what he's up to.
Eli, there you go again. Perception and reality are two different things in your little world, so that is not what was going on here.
I tell you though, that Mark's beautiful Star Lincoln is parked in front of the house today, though, isn't it, Mark?
It looks lovely, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Mark can't afford a beautiful Star Lincoln, only you can.
I have an MKZ hybrid because you know I care about the Earth. Or because I hate going to the gas station might be the real reason. But if you're interested in that, from the power and luxury of the Navigator to the whisper silent interior of the brand new Corsair crossover, Hoop McInerney's star lineup of Lincoln SUVs is as good as it gets. Lincoln SUV sales are up 20% in 2019. I didn't know that. Thanks also to two other new stunning entries in the market, the Aviator, which is pretty damn sweet, and the Nautilus. Eli is constantly raving about his new Nautilus for the comfort features, the crisp 14-speaker Revel audio sound system, and Co-Pilot 360. I don't know what that is. It sounds awesome. The pre-collision assist, which is huge. I needed that on my way to Ann Arbor this weekend. He also swears it has twice warned him of potential accidents. It did?
Yes.
Well, yes. Well, see, it will scare the life out of you and save you at the same time. I got my new MKZ at Star. It's a great family business started 50 years ago by Hoot, the late auto icon way back in the 1970s. His family carries on the tradition of luxury with a spotless dealership and the renowned Star treatment. Come see the best lineups of American SUVs.
I believe that's renowned, actually, but go ahead.
What did I say?
Renowned.
Oh, I did?
Oh. Balls.
You should have read this thing over the phone.
His family carries on the tradition of luxury with a spotless dealership and renowned
star
treatment. Come see the best lineup of American SUVs or buy online with the effortless ownership experience at starlincoln.com. Order your model, features, color, and then just roll in and pick it up at Hoop McInerney's Star Lincoln at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And how are you going to pay that off? You got to have money to pay it off. And if you're worried about your investments, there's one
that
guy.
Was very smooth.
You
I
should
love that
call.
Segue.
It was kind of
smooth as diarrhea.
Yeah, I would go with Denny on
Mark,
that.
Mark,
it's kind of obvious.
Mark, before you continue, Denny and Bob, if you don't think it's going to help sell a car or get somebody to sign up with Luke, shut up and let him read the spot. You're not helping sell Star Lincolns by being funny, and
we
you're not
haven't
helping
said a word. What are you listening to? Are you listening to a different show?
No, Eli's right. Eli, we are humbled and chastened. Mark, go ahead.
Basically, everybody just go buy a Star Lincoln, please. And then go to Luke. Right? Whether you have $11 trillion or $3 and something and change saved up, it's important to have a plan in place when saving for retirement. Some people may believe that it's never been worse, but the truth is there's never a bad time to reanalyze your current plan to achieve the retirement that you want. Call Luke Nowacki at 248-663-4748 for a no-obligation review of your financial strategies. Security investment advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Royal Alliance Associates Incorporated, separately owned, and other entities and or marketing names, products, and services rendered here are independent of Royal Alliances Incorporated. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Now, if I may, boys, I want to mention one other thing about my beloved alma mater. I received late last week a letter from Michigan State University President Dr. Samuel Stanley. Here's what he wrote to all of us. Our community has been affected in the past several days by incidents causing concern and anger. I'm sitting there thinking, what? What do you mean the last? What do you mean the last couple of days? What comes next? Recently, the greater campus community has experienced vandalism at MSU Hillel, our Center for Jewish Student Life. The presence of U.S. Customs and Border Protection on campus last week for a presentation for a class. An instance of racial bias reported from Brian Hall over the weekend. And a survey in the College of Communication Arts and Sciences that offended students. Didn't say what the survey was. And he goes, blah, blah, blah. What the hell else can go wrong at Michigan State University? It's one humiliation, one blunder, and one embarrassment after another.
Well, I agree, but when you have a huge one like they did with Larry Nassar, everything else is going to be really magnified. The racial incident at the hall, did you see what the racial
what
incident
happened?
Was?
No.
A girl had toilet paper strung on her dorm door, and she thought it looked like a noose.
Now, well, why would they put toilet paper over a dorm?
It's Halloween.
Put the toilet paper over her door?
It's Halloween. You know, it's like toilet papering trees. You know, that's how I took it. Now, I'm not saying
that far.
I'm not saying she didn't feel that it was.
Yeah.
But to me, this whole thing is a non-incident, but it's going to get reported on and talked about.
I agree with you, and I don't think Dr. Stanley should have mentioned that then in the note that he sent to Michigan State alums.
But he has to, because that became an incident in the news.
Was the girl, was the co-ed African-American?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And but I'm not doubting that she felt that way, but to me, they found no incident there. Or no malice
did
in
she
what
file
happened.
Did she file a complaint?
I think she did. And they said, But the point being,
it's Halloween.
They're going to look at everything. Everything's going to be made into a mountain.
Yeah.
Based on
toilet paper. Is this like when people see the Virgin Mary in a cupcake or something like that? They perceive it to be there?
I saw it, but I don't have the ethnic history she does, so I didn't see a noose in the picture, even knowing the story. But, the university felt it wasn't what she thought it was either. Once again, everything gets magnified there because of it.
I think you're right about that. Everything's magnified at state right now. Now, fellas, I know what the three of you are into. I'm not. I don't think Brandon is either. But I want your opinion about this. ESPN over the weekend ran the highlights of Oklahoma's stunning loss at Kansas State. Mm-hmm. Looked like a bad officials call. What else? And an onside kick by OU at the end of the game might have cost them. But when the highlights had ended on ESPN, they immediately put up a full screen graphic saying that Oklahoma had been a 23.5 point favorite at K-State, and that they were 1-7 as double-digit road favorites against the spread. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what it's come to. You guys are right. You're gambling football, and you keep telling me how big this is. It's just getting out of control, isn't it?
It's what built the NFL to be what it is today, gambling.
Partly. I know what you're saying.
Nothing's 100%.
Well,
people gamble all the time. Bring it out of the dark. Stop acting like it doesn't exist and treat it appropriately.
Well, I don't think anybody treats it like it doesn't exist, and it exists more and more and more. I mean, I was just in New York the last couple, 2.5, 3 days, and this is what got my attention. And Bob lives there, so Bob sees this all the time. Television stations promoting gambling all day long.
Mm-hmm.
This one New Jersey station, about every other spot, but I bet they ran 7 or 8 spots an hour promoting gambling. The network that brings you managed gambling. I mean, I couldn't believe what they were saying. I mean, this never happened before. And I'll tell you, it's rock and roll time there. You can go and place your bets. Guys were at the show on Saturday afternoon. They had a run out in New Jersey to make their bets, with the state bookmakers.
They don't know they can just do it on their phone?
Well, I suppose they do. But, boy, I'll tell you, they run out and they make their bets. And these guys all came back, for God's sake.
Is there a danger in gambling? I know, Bob, you think there is. And of course
there
is.
Do I think there is?
Of course there is.
I work with a great guy. I work at ABC Radio National in New York. I work with a great guy named Greg Schmaltz. He was a big, big gambler as well. One day, remember when you were little boys and they read the story of Stuart Little?
Mm-hmm.
How Stuart Little came home and his mommy and daddy had moved. Greg Schmaltz isn't the only guy in the world this happened to. He came home from work to an empty house because his wife had packed up in a moving van, took the kids, and left for an unknown place and didn't leave a forwarding address. Gambling can and does ruin lives.
So can alcohol.
Exactly. So can a lot of things. So I thought you were going to get to the question being, is it going to corrupt college football? My answer to that is no. It's going to corrupt the individuals that are addictive personalities,
right.
The 2 or 3% that are going to destroy their families, not like alcohol has done, etc., or opioids has done. But it's very hard to fix a college football game. How are you going to fix it with a quarterback? Not really. He can't, it's just too many players. Now, basketball is a different story. You can fix a basketball game. I just don't think that's a danger. I think it's more the societal thing where it becomes an obsession. And it already has with fantasy sports, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what percentage of people gamble and you include fantasy? It's everywhere. You just it's up to the individual, whether it's nicotine, whether it's opioids, or whether it's gambling. Each individual's got to take care of himself.
And
I don't think
it's
going to corrupt the sport.
And I know we're talking about gambling on the football, basketball, what have you. But you know what? It started with the casinos, and it just built off the casinos, mm-hmm. and it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And like Eli said, that 2-4% that had obsessive personalities, mm-hmm. they're the ones that are going to really get whacked. And somehow, some way, there has to be a way to manage this. But no one's going to figure that out, because the bottom line is you want the money, honey.
And, yep, it's you're right. It's the dirty little secret.
Right.
And I married my high school sweetheart, who grew up in a very wealthy home. And her stepfather was a huge NFL gambler. She said you always knew at dinner Sunday night what had happened. If he was in a good mood, he won. But if he lost, there was a pall on that entire household. Yeah. And it lasted well into the week. You could hear the proverbial pin drop. It was so awful to be in that house.
Wait, that's what happens.
Morality.
That's what happens with me. For Michigan games, money on the line or not.
It
can ruin my whole weekend.
Look at Las Vegas with the $1 billion casino.
Yep,
$1 billion. Each one fueled by gamblers. Sit at the Parthenon or one of the restaurants on Monroe there in Detroit and look at the exit of the Greek Town Casino. Look at the faces coming out. About one out of 20 has a smile. The other guys look like the dog just died. It's very difficult. So here's a question for you. So I go to the Pitt Miami game. We got a tour of the facility. By the way, the Pitt Panthers are in the same practice facility as the Steelers, and it is spectacular. They got 4 football fields there.
Wow.
So I'm going through looking at Pitt and saying, my God, I can't believe all the incredible players that play here. And so there are 4 guys. They gave out a handout, I think, of the Mount Rushmore of the 4 greatest Pitt Panthers. Anybody want to take a guess who's on it?
DeMarino, Dorsett, Hugh Green.
Joe Schmidt better be on it.
He is not. Joe Schmidt is not on it.
Wait.
You are right with Dorsett and Marino.
Not Hugh Green?
Now I want a tight end and a receiver.
Tight end. Where'd Christensen go?
Wide receivers is obviously the kid in Arizona.
Oh, right? Larry exactly. Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald. Yeah, great.
Who's the tight end?
I don't know.
Mike Ditka.
Ditka.
That's right.
Yeah.
You look at my God, did all the happen to ever won any national championships? An amazing array of players. You take an offense with Ditka, Dorsett, Marino, Fitzgerald. They also had Jimbo Covert was an offensive lineman. Amazing. And yet. No national championship.
Well, and the funny thing about that is, as everybody knows, longtime Michigan State defensive coordinator Pat Narduzzi jumped at that job just because of the resources Eli's talking about. And now some people are saying, well, if D'Antonio leaves at the end of the year, maybe Narduzzi's coming back. He ain't exactly set the world on fire there, has he, Eli?
No, he is not. In fact, he doesn't touch the offense at all. My guy was the offensive coordinator. He doesn't even communicate with them, but can't really comment on that. I can't comment on that.
Why can't you comment? Something?
I got some inside information, but I can't comment.
Did he let you call a play during the game since he's such a good friend?
I watched. It's so sad. You know, they throw an interception. The receiver goes the wrong way. Basically, he said you just can't. And it's tough because the campus is far away. So these kids have to come. They got to commute to get to the practice facility. Sometimes they're late. You know, it's just very difficult when it isn't all right there in one spot.
That's the problem the Minnesota Golden Gophers had, and then they got a lot of money. They built a nice facility on campus, huge, athletic display. And look at where they are now. A lot of people don't like the 8-0. I personally, I'm a believer in this team. I'm a believer in Minnesota. And there's no reason
did you see the highlights of that Minnesota game the other day?
I did.
What on earth were they wearing out there? Gray uniforms.
The kids
to make
love them.
More money and sell more unis.
That's what they always say about bad uniforms. The kids love them. Which I don't know if they really care. I think they care about all the amenities they get before and after practice. That's what makes.
Yeah.
And that would help goes into a decision of where to go to school for these kids.
Now, hey, Eli, again, you can't see this, but I feel like I'm sitting in on an episode of the Soupy Sales Show today, because every now and then into my camera comes a hand, just like Black Tooth or White Fang, and the hand is showing Mark, we need to go to a commercial break, I guess, from our producer, Brandon McAvey. Is that what that means?
No, he wants you.
Goodbye to radio. You got to say goodbye to radio.
Not yet. I have the clock. We're okay there.
In the mailbag.
He wanted to dip. Hey, Denny's paying attention now. He wanted to dip into the mailbag. Well done. That's because you're sitting here.
I've been sitting here listening to all your BS for the last 25 minutes, for God's sake.
Like the Scherzer stuff wasn't BS.
We're talking about psychology 101 at Michigan State University. He keeps wanting to talk about Trump and all the other crazy people that we have discussed from time to time. I mean, Mark.
I know.
Okay.
You showed me where the stairs were even before we started.
I did.
But don't forget, we're talking about Man United as well.
Yes.
Oh, God, they can go to hell.
Yes, we are.
I wanted to say, though, before we go say goodbye to our radio audience, you know, what is this about the Wings? They play Sunday against the defending Stanley Cup champion Blues. You know, they're behind two goals quickly. Then they play really well in the third period. They tie it at four. Then they lose 5-4 in overtime. So the papers are reporting correctly that they're now 0-7-1 in their last eight games. To me, a loss is a loss. They got an eight-game losing streak right now. Edmonton's at home Tuesday night as speculation continues about Jeff Blashill's job. How long do you let something like this go? You know what? This is a must-win against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Oilers already. It really is. What if the Wings lose, and Edmonton, by the way, 8-3-1, leading the NHL's Pacific Division, and already beat the Wings once this year, just a couple weeks ago? I mean, are we talking about a quick coaching change here? What do you guys think?
Cool. I'd like to see Yzerman become the general manager coach at the same time. Of course, that won't happen. I can't That's answer that. I don't know, but Steve's wheels are turning, and it'd be fascinating to watch. I have no idea.
Why would you suggest that Steve should become the coach?
I was reading in the paper the other day about the former Tiger manager, Bucky Harris. He's the last one to win a World Series in Washington, even though it's three teams ago. He was a 27-year-old player manager. Didn't Phil Esposito do that once? Didn't he step out as a GM and become a coach? I'm trying to think here. I don't know.
You really think that'll cure anything?
No.
Listen, they hired him for one thing, to develop players, get some players. Stevie's a likable guy. He's got a great history, great resume. A lot of guys are going to want to play here for a change. A lot of guys don't want to come to Detroit, as we all know that.
But then I remember this also, is that he doesn't really have a history with Jeff Blashill. I want to repeat what we've said. Blash is a great guy. I think he's a very good coach. He so deserved this opportunity, but it doesn't seem to me that it's working.
Well, now we have hit that moment where it is time to say goodbye to the radio listeners on WDFN and WCWA. If you want to hear the Nick Lidstrom interview coming up, The Pursuit of Perfection is the book, go to the website, download the podcast. It's nofiltersportspodcast.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
The reason I mentioned it was because we're talking about Belichick. I'm here in Massachusetts talking to my buddy. Okay. And Belichick is the general manager as well as the coach. He's on top of every player in the league,
Everything. Every
player on his team, incredible responsibility to do it all. But that's why I just threw it out there. I don't think it'll happen. Steve has never coached before, but sometimes, desperate.
He's got his hands full doing this right now and trying to rebuild this. I mean,
who?
It's too big a job. You have to have all
kinds of business. It was just a wild thought, but no, it's
an insane thought.
Yeah. And by the way, later on, we got an interview with Nicholas Lidstrom today, too.
So, yes, we do. So, and of course, we're coming off a show in which we had Dino Ciccarelli on. He was a terrific guest. Everybody
Great
loves
guest.
Dino. And Dino actually leads off our mailbag segment today. Are we ready for the mailbag, boys?
Terrific.
If we are, here we go. So David in SL, now I don't think he means St. Louis, Missouri, St. Louis, Michigan, tweeted me. And don't forget that you can tweet all of us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, at Bob Page Sports. So this is one of the best lines I've heard in a long time. Ready for this? David says, someone who played for Scotty Bowman, because we were talking about how Dino had so many problems with Bowman, and Nicky Lidstrom did too. Someone who played for Scotty Bowman said that you hated his guts 364 days a year. When asked what he did the other day, he replied, well, then you go pick up your Stanley Cup ring.
Yeah.
Is that the way it is?
Isn't that the way it is for most great coaches?
Lombardi, you look at the success he had in Green Bay. I don't think people hated Don Shula. And there's
Saban.
So many other, great coaches and managers in all four of our major sports.
Most great coaches are great disciplinarians. I had a number of them. And you toe the line, or you're not going to be there very long, and you're not going to pick up a ring. But the guys that are disciplinarians, they do pretty well.
Next note. Hey, Booby, please pass this along. First of all, pal, if my name were Powell Wunek, W-N-E-K, I wouldn't be throwing stones at anybody else's name. I wouldn't be making fun of me.
Come on, Booby.
Powell continues.
Booby, read the letter.
Episode 81. Eli, please get off of the Lions wagon. How can you and Denny say this is the best team they've had in a long time? Their record is a direct visual of how good they are. I agree with Bob. They coulda if they only would have. Now, of course, he wrote this before they beat the Giants on Sunday.
People
How about you go out there and play football for 60 minutes? What's the excuse for the tie against my Arizona Cardinals? Not scoring more than 16 against the Chargers, having a ton of luck in Philly. This is the same old crap over and over again, but different year. And this is coming from a Canadian, a Cardinals fan. Well, that's good, because any Canadian, Pavel, worth his or her salt and of a certain age has a winter place in either Arizona or Florida. Unless you want to root for the Hamilton Ticats or Winnipeg Blue Bombers, why not pick an NFL team? Oh, and our friend
I just said they looked improved. That's all I said, is they look improved. I didn't say they were great. People take a little tidbit and they blow it into something that isn't. I never said they look great, but they look better than they have in the last few years. That's what I said.
All the noise about the Lions, this is what annoys me about them, is the diehard fans that love them that think this is the year, they're not going to ever be 14-2, but they're not going to consistently be 2-14. The NFL sets them up to be in that range between 7-9 and 9-7 pretty much every year.
Sometimes the NFL does what?
They set them up. There's so much parody.
What, are you reading this out of a book? You got a secret?
Look at the NFL. Aside from the Patriots and the Dolphins who are tanking, everyone's the same.
Wait a minute. It's all about talent. And if everyone's the same, you know what that makes you do? It makes the coach really become a coach.
Well, sure, but I'm just saying the way that league is set up is that it's hard to consistently be a really good team. Every team is pretty mediocre.
You need to shave, too, by the way.
No, but you're right, Mark.
What part of my body?
Mark, you're right. But the good teams, like the Saints, like even the 49ers, the Patriots, the Colts, they may back off for a few years because, you know, you don't get to pick the high, but they always manage to come back. The thing about the Lions is they never manage to come back be a force. They're always at best 8-8, 9-7 may make the playoffs.
But two of the teams you named, and Brandon's heard me say this probably way too often, you mentioned the Patriots and the Saints, and those two have a thing that those NFL teams, because I've always said this about Stafford, people think he sucks or he's great. I just think he's an average NFL quarterback because there's really only four really good quarterbacks right now.
I don't agree with that. If Matt Stafford won a really good team, he'd be one of the biggest names in the league.
You don't think you could trade on what team? You think if he was with
the Patriots? How about the Green Bay Packers and put Aaron Rodgers on the FLs?
Oh, I think the Lions would be better because I think Aaron Rodgers is one of those four teams. I think the Packers would look like the Lions look today.
I just feel it's really good.
Oh, I think he's really good too. Yeah. But is he any different than?
I'll tell you what I would like. I'd like to see him with the Bears.
I think they would be this. I think they don't look the same.
No, I don't. I
really
don't
do.
Because the Bears have got such an awesome defense. I mean, that's where I come in to play with the Bears. If they had a quarterback, I mean, this kid really fooled everybody. And this quarterback is
Mitch Trubisky.
I feel the line between Stafford, Trubisky, Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers.
I think they're all the same.
I think the league is just
Matt
that hard.
Stafford with Mitch bleeping Trubisky?
I think they're all the same.
I believe you're drinking early in the morning.
I think there's just those four, maybe five quarterbacks that are above and beyond, and you can put them on any team and they're going to win.
Well, you don't think Stafford can win with another team?
I just think it would be I just think the quarterback position, believe it or not, is a little overrated.
What?
You got to be kidding.
It's a quarterback-driven league.
I know, because if you have one of those four guys that is above and beyond, I think everybody else is interchangeable.
I think that with the right situation.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
You think if they swapped Stafford with name another quarterback.
Chicago
How about
Bears.
Joe Flacco? How about Joe Flacco? He won a Super Bowl. Is he better than Stafford? I don't think
no.
so.
No, but I think if you swap them right now, those two teams would be exactly the same. Yeah.
Stafford better than Ryan?
I think they're exactly the same.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Watching them play. I do.
Matt Ryan's a hell of a quarterback, please.
I know that.
I know Atlanta's having a terrible year, I know. But
exactly. So the quarterback position is overrated to that point.
No, it's not.
If he's a hell of a quarterback and they're having that year, it's more than just the quarterback on the team.
The teams that win are the quarterbacks. If you got the great quarterback,
if you have the most hard, you're right. That's my point. If you have the great quarterbacks, if you have one of the four.
These teams don't win unless they've got a very good
quarterback. If you have Rodgers or Brady or Wilson.
We had a game manager in Trent Dilfer who won a Super Bowl.
Yes.
But think about it, and maybe you can put a couple other guys in that category, but how many game managers have ever won championships?
Very few.
Great quarterbacks right. win championships.
There's yeah. no one position in any sport
right.
that's more important. You could say a pitcher, yeah, but
well,
he only
maybe a goalie in hockey.
And,
you're right.
But yeah. to that point, Bob, who are the quarterbacks that have won the championships recently?
Well, you know, I mean, you got a guy in New England who's won a couple of them, yeah. and a guy in Seattle who's a pretty good player, and a guy in New Orleans who's a pretty good player.
There's three yeah. of them, and Peyton the fourth
Manning
is Rodgers. So
player,
outside,
yeah.
but outside of those four quarterbacks right now, yeah. maybe Mahomes that we'll see. Outside of those four, everybody else is the same.
All right, back to, and this is not the former New York Giants standout center of the same name. He would never say such a thing to me. Sean O'Hara writes me, the profile pic on your No Filter Sports logo looks familiar. It looks like Bob screaming out his pompous diatribes into space. Well, Sean, first of all, when we came up with this, Eli, this is the truth, apologized to all of us about the logo because it's obviously Eli's profile. He claims it is not. But that looks like Eli Zerrett on our logo.
Yeah,
it
looks
doesn't
more
look like
me than you, but it's not me. It's not me. The artist said he just
sure,
found
it like
online.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? I always thought that was you, Eli.
Bob likes to bring attention to himself either in a negative or positive ways. One of these guys, just talk about me. Okay, so that guy doesn't like you. How about the next one?
Yeah. Go on to the next one, guess what? He's back. Here's Pavel again. Second email this week, boys. I'm on fire. Anyways, in regards to Jim Harfraud, did he just set a bar in Michigan for how much a coach should expect to be paid for mediocrity? You know, and so on and so forth. Again, this is written before that Notre Dame game, but people are pissed at Harbaugh, and they better not get killed by Ohio State, and they better make sure they beat Michigan State in Indiana. That's all I'm saying.
They are going to get walloped by Ohio State.
Probably. I don't know about that. They played so well the second half against
Probably.
Penn State, and they played well against Notre Dame. I don't know.
I'm sorry. This Ohio State is in a different league.
I kind of agree with you, Denny. Make no mistake. Urban Meyer still has his hands in that
program.
Yes,
he does.
Regardless of what anybody says. He helps them game plan.
We have a website, folks, and you can ask us any questions you like. AskNoFilter@gmail.com. And here is Kimberly Garzanitti. Thank you, Denny. Your funny story about thinking that Mr. Jackaloni's name was Jack Coloni made my day. As someone who is not part of the MSU alumni base, I for years thought a Mr. Daniel Tonio coached the Spartan football team. Only later did I learn that his name was not Dan Antonio, but was in fact D'Antonio.
Yeah, I did the
now,
same thing.
You can also call us, folks, and you can leave a message for us whenever you like, and our number is 760-89-BALLS. That's right, 89-BALLS. Here's one from an unnamed texter. I suspect this is the same guy all the time. Hey, Bob, the FLs beat your team. When do you start referring to them as the FGs for bleeping Giants? Well, you know what? I'm petitioning the NFL offices here in New York City later on today to have the Giants 5 Super Bowl appearances and 4 Super Bowl wins stricken from the record. So I can't call them that. And how many times have the FLs been to a Super Bowl, pal?
Well, we already said goodbye to the radio audience. It's now to say goodbye to Eli because we need the phone line.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One more thing, though.
We got a couple more things.
I'm going to tell Lidstrom he's got to wait for your one more thing.
Well, Nicky's fine. It's worth while. We're going to call him as we tape this. And finally, this is from a certain individual who's been a regular on this program. Hello, good boys. I'm driving with my valet to drop me off at my bank downtown Detroit. And I just wanted to commend you on a wonderful interview with Michael Lucci, a very handsome man. Keep up the good work. You guys are the best thing to happen in the history of podcasting. You're terrific. Grosse Pointe Charles is signing off. Well, my dear Charles, you fail to say whether you're just depositing more millions at your bank or whether you own the bank as the late lamented Mr. Drysdale owned his in Beverly Hills, California.
And speaking about owning banks, we got to take our hats off to Tiger Woods. He's made a comeback. He's won his 18th major championship. He's won now 84 tournaments, tied Sam Snead.
That's not a major championship.
And you know what?
Just
hang on a minute. Would you please go back and stiff
he
me?
He won an event in Japan nobody even knew was on.
Bob, just figure out how you're going to stiff me the next time you're going to take me to lunch.
I'm going to say goodbye, and I'm going to thank Mark for not letting the idiots run the asylum, as usually happens. He did a wonderful job of managing this. and I got some adventures here in Massachusetts to have today. So good luck. I'm excited to hear the Lidstrom interview. I will listen to the podcast later. Carry on, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure as always.
Goodbye. Get off our telephone line.
Lidstrom firing it in. Scores! Nick Lidstrom beating Kluche with a long-range knuckler.
Lidstrom with it. The shot.
Wow, man. NHL Hall of Famer, 7 Norris Trophies, Conn Smythe Trophy, Olympic gold medal, 4 Stanley Cups, and now author, Nicholas Lidstrom, The Pursuit of Perfection is the book. How are you this morning, Nicholas?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. A book. I mean, I'm just kind of surprised that Nicholas Lidstrom is writing a book. Why write a book right now, Nick?
Well, I did get asked the question to write a book when I was still playing, but I kind of pushed it aside and said, nothing I'm really interested in. But once I retired and once I moved back to Sweden, and the question came up again, I decided to, well, it might be fun to document my career and go over and try to remember everything that I've accomplished and been part of for so many years in Detroit. That's why I finally decided to do one.
It really sounds like a retired guy who's looking to fill some time.
Will you leave him alone?
Oh, stop it. Please. 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 Wow.
If he wants to write a book, Nick, let him write a book.
My father retired a few years ago. Granted, he's in his 70s, and he's bored. He doesn't have enough to do. Are you bored, Nick?
No, I'm not bored. I've been involved with hockey, youth hockey over here in Sweden once I retired, so I've been staying active. But this was something that was fun when the idea came up to me that I was asked the question to do it. So it's been a fun thing to do.
Mark, you don't know. Nick's got 4 kids who are terrific hockey players.
I know.
Nick, how are the kids doing over there? And I'm curious as to why you thought playing in Sweden might be better for your sons than staying in the U.S.
We really enjoyed living and staying in the U.S. But, when it really had to make a decision on where to live once I retired, we decided to move back closer to family and friends and the kids' relatives, and that's why we made the decision to move back home. But we had some great times in Detroit, and we really enjoyed living there as well.
Yeah, this is Denny McClain. That way too, you got grandparents to watch the kids.
Yeah, that's right. You can do some more traveling, and someone can watch the kids for you. So that helps too.
Listen, with the book, did you use the book to clear up any misunderstandings about your great career or anything around the career?
No, nothing like that. I think it was more of trying to remember all the things that I've been through, especially in Detroit, but even before that, and growing up in Sweden, and trying to put everything in writing and remember everything. I think that was the toughest part, too, all the little details and all the things that happened throughout my career.
Well, if you think it's tough now, wait 20 years.
Growing up in Sweden, what did the NHL mean to you over there? I mean, it's not like you have the internet and you can watch highlights. I mean, what did you know of the NHL, and when did it come into your reality?
Let me interject this to that question. You grew up idolizing Börje Salming, didn't you? Who played with the Leafs for so many years.
Did.
Was that a big reason you got into hockey?
That's one of the reasons. Back when I was growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, there was no internet. There was nothing really to watch here in Sweden. In regards to NHL games, but they would show some highlights and show, of course, the Swedish players when they played. And Börje was one of the biggest players playing in the NHL at the time. So he became my idol, and I think that's the main reason I wanted to become a defenseman as well. That he was playing that position, so he kind of helped me to start liking hockey. And then once you start playing and your friends are playing, I enjoyed it more and more. And when I was 15, 16, I decided to have a run at it, to put all the work I could into it and see how good I could become. And luckily enough, there was a scout over here in Sweden watching me that was working for the Red Wings, and that scouted me and finally drafted me as well.
Did you play any other sports?
I did. I played soccer up until I was 15. I played tennis, played basketball a couple of years, seasons as well. So I tried different sports before I decided to do hockey full time.
Let me ask you about the current Red Wings. Yzerman the right guy at this point in time? And I'm not looking for you to criticize him. I don't mean to imply that at all. But is he the right guy at this point?
Well, is Jeff Blashill the right guy, too?
I think Steve is the right guy to lead this team forward. It's a tough decision, or spot that he's put into with the team is pretty much set with all the salaries and the players they have signed. But I think Steve is the right guy to make the team a successful team again. Looking back on what he did in Tampa when he got there, he drafted some. They drafted some high end players. They signed some free agents, and he made some trades to make them a competitive team. So I think Steve is the right guy to do that for the team.
Have you heard from him at all since he's taken over the job?
I was actually in Detroit a few weeks ago. I saw their home opener, and I had a chance to talk to Steve just briefly in between periods. And you know, he was excited to be back in Detroit again, be back full time. You know, he kept his house, and his wife was still in Detroit, but he was traveling back and forth. So he was excited about the opportunity to be part of the Wings again.
Let me get back to the second part of my question, Nick. How about Jeff Blashill? The club, as we taped this interview, is really struggling. Is he the right guy to coach this team? Is he a little too soft? Do they need somebody tougher?
I don't think he's too soft. I think he's a great teacher. I had him. He was the first year assistant coach in my last season, so he wasn't the head of the ship, but he was one of the assistant coaches, and then he spent some time down in Grand Rapids. I think that's where you see in today's team a lot of those players he had down in Grand Rapids are the guys playing with the Wings today. So I think he's a great teacher to, especially with a young team that they have, to kind of learn or teach them how to play the game right and develop these kids to become great players in the league.
And Nick, you know, Stevie has some of his former teammates in the front office as well. We know Draper and Maltby have roles in the organization. It's incredible to believe that it's been 7 years since you played the game. Do you have any interest in joining the NHL at any level in terms of management or coaching?
Not right now. Right now, I'm still have a couple of kids living at home, but I'm following their careers and their hockey. And we'll see what happens, you know, down the road. But right now, I'm comfortable being back in Sweden and being retired and watch my kids and do other things. So we'll see what happens once the kids get a little bit older.
Have you got a budding star there? It seems to me like you're talking about somebody within the family.
Well, how about Kevin? His son Kevin, 25, is already playing for Swedish Division I team, right? SK Legion, right?
Yeah, that's right. My two oldest boys are actually playing on the same team, and they're enjoying themselves. The two younger boys that are playing junior hockey and team here in Västerås, where we live. So the kids are active, still playing, and I'm enjoying being able to watch them a lot more now.
Nick, I tweeted out your appearance last night. You're such a hero in Detroit. I don't have to tell you that. Listener Mike Rizzo had something interesting to say. You hear this on talk shows. You hear it from fans. You would have played two more years with the Red Wings had it not been for the fact that Mike Babcock was still there. Very few guys like playing for Babs. Is that why you quit the Wings when you did?
No, not at all. Not at all. Babs was not the reason why I retired. The reason I retired was I didn't have the fire anymore, the determination and the will to train hard and to do it every day, and that was my main reason. If I wanted to play a couple more years, I would have done it, even with Babcock as my coach. I didn't mind Babs at all. He's a demanding coach. He's intense, and he can be tough on players, but he's a successful coach too, and that's what you look at as players. You want to have success, and he was a big part of the Wings' success when he was there.
Yeah, well, you know, I ran into, at a Panthers game in Florida, David Legwand, who's actually from my hometown of Grosse Pointe, Michigan. And he was with the Wings, and I asked him outside the locker room, gee, it must be a thrill to be back home in Detroit and to get to play for the Wings. He looked at me and said, and I quote, "Nobody wants to be here." And that was because of Mike Babcock.
I didn't see that when I was there. I know some players had a tough time with him because he was demanding and he was tough on some players, and he could be tough on younger players. But I didn't have a problem, you know, with him being a demanding coach. Scotty Bowman was demanding as well. He was a little bit different. He was more old school than what Babs was. But you know, I didn't mind playing for coaches like that because I wanted to have success. That's what we had with both Scotty and Babs.
Who was the coach that had the most influence in your career?
I think Scotty has a big influence on my career. I think Dave Lewis, maybe even more. Yeah. He had an assistant coach at the time. You know, when I joined the league, joined the Wings in 1991, he was the assistant coach. And he helped me out a lot. He helped me and Vladdy Konstantinov. You know, we came in together. I think he helped us a lot the first few years of learning how to play in the league, learn to play our position right, and knowing what it takes to go to work every day. I think he was probably the most had most influence on my career, even though he was an assistant coach. But he was you know, the D-man coach and helped me out a lot, especially early on.
Now, how about as a player, you were paired with Brad McCrimmon when you came up to the wings. Everybody called him Sarge. You thought he was your mentor. You even said he was your protector. He was a defensive D-man and is 10th on the NHL's all-time career plus-minus list. He is the only player in the top 20, not in the Hall of Fame in that department. So McCrimmon, of course, was tragically killed in a 2011 plane crash in Russia. Was that the worst day of your life, Nick?
It was. And I, you know, when we came down to the rink and heard the news about it, it was devastating to hear. We didn't believe it was true, you know, first of all, but it was devastating to hear that. You know, he was another, even though he was a player, but he had great influence on me early on. He was my partner. He was my roommate on the road. He really took me under his wing my first couple years. And he was that stay-at-home defenseman. He let me join the rush to be part of the offense. And when there was a scrum or something happened in front of the net, he was that guy, you know, protecting me or showing the other guys that, you know, they would have to go through him to come to me. So he was the man's man. You know, he was a great character and great for the team, great for young players to be around.
And listener and our old friend Bill Collins wants to know, do you think that McCrimmon, given those stats, as well as Vladdy, who we all know what happened to, had to quit at age 30, do you think these guys should be in the Hall of Fame?
I think they should be mentioned. I think they should be in consideration to what they have done in the league. You know, Vladdy was, you know, his career got cut short because of the limo accident. He was a runner-up for a Norris Trophy of the year. We won the Cup in 97. He was just hitting his prime, and then this tragic accident happened. And same thing with Beast, the way he played. He won a Cup in Calgary in the late 90s. He had a terrific career as well. He played a lot longer, but I think those should be taken into consideration for sure.
With all due respect, let's move it to a happier moment for a minute. Did they ever set you down and set you up with a nickname?
The perfect human. That's why the title of his book is called
Bob,
The Pursuit
Bob,
of Perfection.
Bob, we're interviewing Nick, not you.
Well, that's the two Chris's in with the wings. Chris Draper and Chris Oskett came up with that. And I think it was one of the reporters in the locker room kind of overheard them talking about it. It wasn't something that they told a reporter. Because Ozzy had all the nicknames for all the guys.
Right.
And he came up with Ticker for Kevin Hodgson because of his heart problems. He had all the different kinds of nicknames. And that's, he came up with that for me, along with Drapes. And that kind of stuck after one of the reporters put it in the paper.
Yeah. And when I played baseball, they gave me a nickname and called me the Dolphin because I was the biggest fish whenever we gambled playing cards and what have you. Believe it or not, they used to get all my meal money within 48 hours once we got on the road.
Yeah, I think I would be more proud of the perfect human than the Dolphin.
Yeah, well, I would too. And I'm sure he is. One other question, because I had four kids and all four of them played different sports growing up. I thought one was going to be a baseball player for a while, but I used to jump up and down watching them playing Little League baseball, Babe Ruth baseball, and all the other. And I got thrown out of two or three games in my career as a father coaching his kids. You're a superstar. Did you ever have one of my moments when I got a little bit out of control and started asking the umpire about his validity as a human being?
I don't think I've ever gotten that far. I'm sure I've been upset with some of the referees and some of the calls, but I kind of kept it under wraps. I think I'm more of a calm person than maybe I'm a real acting and real loud as a coach. But I've had my moments where you kind of bite in your tongue and you want to say something to the ref. And, you know, when the kids are young, the refs are only a few years older. So it's hard to get on them as well.
Benny, that's why he's the perfect human.
That's exactly.
And plus, you could use that against your kids when you're disciplining them off the ice. You say, hey, I'm the perfect human. Listen to me. I'm right. When you got to the wings and you talked about McCrimmon helping you out on the ice and Dave Lewis, what about off the ice? What was the big adjustment to living in America? Was there any misconceptions you had?
I think everything was just so big. coming from a small country like Sweden, yeah. everything was 5 or 10 minutes away. You can ride your bike there. Now all of a sudden it's a half-hour drive down to the ring, going out to the big shopping malls. Everything just seemed so much bigger. One advantage was that I could speak the language. I mentioned Vladdy and Sergey was as well. They didn't speak much English, and they had a tougher time than I did because I couldn't ask questions and I could get around that way. But I think that was the biggest adjustment, just the size of everything. And I didn't know anyone except some of my teammates, and that they all became my closest friends when you don't have any other friends or relatives around. So it really gets the team.
Mark mentioned, Nick, the 4 Stanley Cups that you won with Wings, 20 years, all with the Detroit Red Wings. I'm sure you've been asked this before. Which of those 4 teams was the best, and did one cup mean more to you than any of the others?
All the cups had kind of different meanings. They're all special in their own way. The first one in 97 was 42 years in the making. We won it again, and then in 2002 we had an all-pro team. Mm-hmm. We had 9 future Hall of Famers on that team, which was unheard of at the time. Yeah. And 2008 was special because I was the captain and the first European-born captain to hoist the Stanley Cup. They're all special in their own ways, but it's hard to pick one over the other.
And one team better than another?
I think I would have to say that 2002 team. That was an all-star team, like I said, putting together. And that's we won the President's Trophy as the best regular season, most points in regular season, and then we went all the way to win the cup as well. So we really, really backed it up in the regular season and in the playoffs.
Almost 2006 Winter Olympics in Turin, Italy. You scored the game-winning goal in the gold medal winning game against Finland. In doing so, you became a member of the Triple Gold Club. Now, we hear some guys say that winning a gold medal for your country is the biggest thrill in sports. Is that true with you, or were the Stanley Cups true as a bigger thrill?
I would have to put them both up on the number one, because the Olympics is special because you're only being there every fourth year, and you have a chance to represent your country, which is very special. But it's only a short tournament. You're only there for 2 weeks max, and winning a Stanley Cup, you have your training camp in September. You set up a goal to go all the way and win a cup in June the following year, and then you go all the way and do it. So that's very special to do that, and the journey you make with your team throughout the regular season and the playoffs. So it's hard to rank one over the other. I think they're both right there at number one.
There's a little bit of redemption too in that one too, right? In the
because they'd lost the gold medal game before.
And the Swedish media was not very nice, which kind of blows my mind. I would think Swedish media would always be
nice.
Yeah,
no, we had some tough losses both in 98 in Japan. We lost the quarterfinals, and in 2002 we lost to Belarus, where we were big favorites. We should have won that game, but they somehow scored a goal from center ice, which turned out to be the winner. And they beat us, I believe, 4-3 in that game, which was devastating to us, and we just got killed in the papers back home, too. We were letting our country down, and that was a hard pill to swallow, but it was nice to back it up, 4 years later and win in Italy, 2006.
Nick, I got one more question for you. Let's talk about money, if we can, in sports, because there's so much greed. We see it everywhere.
Athletes love talking about money.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about Nick that a lot of people don't know. He was set to make $10 million a year in the 2005-06 season, but the NHL collective bargaining agreement cut that salary by 24%. Nick responds by having a career-high 64 assists, 16 goals, and 80 points. Then you sign a 2-year, $15.2 million extension with the Wings when you could have gotten a whole lot of money to go someplace else. Why did you decide to remain in Detroit?
First of all, I really, really loved Detroit. We loved living there. We loved the culture. We loved the fans and our friends that we made. So my wife and I made a decision to not move, not wait until July 1st and try free agency and see what kind of offers were out there. We decided this is where we want to stay, where we want to live, and where I want to play. And the Illichs have been so great to me over the years. So I wanted to stay there and play for them, but I also wanted to play for a competitive team. And I thought that this, if I could have made a couple million more somewhere else wasn't that big of a deal for me. I wanted to be with a winner, and I wanted to be with one organization if I could, and that was the Wing.
And the other thing, too, is happy wife means happy life.
That sure helps, too, doesn't it?
It sure does, Nick. Absolutely it does.
Hey, Nick, thanks for being on. You're such a beloved figure in Detroit. We wish you a lot of luck with your book, The Pursuit of Perfection, published by Triumph. And best of luck, especially your hockey-playing sons. We'll see what becomes of them.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Nick, thanks a million. Thanks, we really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Love wow. You know, I mean, you look at a guy here in Nick Lidstrom, who they say is the perfect human.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's one of the biggest stars in the history of hockey and one of the biggest sports stars Detroit has ever seen.
He's
and you cannot dislike this guy.
He's very, very humble. You can feel it.
He is.
You can hear it. And, you know, listen. He's never done anything that you ever had a question.
No controversy either.
None.
Nope.
None.
No. Absolutely. There's a fun little story in the book, too, about the first check he ever got from the Wings, $15,000. Like, he just blew his mind that he got $15,000, so he went out and bought a Nissan 300. The world to him.
You mean to tell me I got a bigger check, the first check, than he did?
I guess so. He said the first check, I think that was his first salary check. He realized that he got a signing bonus and that the Wings had set up a bank account for him and put the money in there. And he's like, I didn't know they would do that. It's just the guy's humble from day one to even today. I mean, how can you not root for him?
My first check in professional sports was for $17,500.
Really? And how much of it did you spend immediately?
That was in 1962.
Yeah, it's a long time before.
I bought two cars, one for me and my mother. Okay. I paid off her house, and I bought a bunch of clothes and still had $2,200
that you still fit into
left.
Today, those clothes.
Yeah. I still fit
into baseball,
the clothes.
Well, baseball's
today.
A lot more popular in the United States than hockey is. But, you know, I heard recently that Sweden has now overtaken Canada as the number one hockey nation in the world, no matter what that means, number of NHL players, interest in the game, so on and so forth. Fascinating.
Huh. Their soccer team's gotten way better, too.
Yeah, who cares about that?
Oh, no.
But the one thing about Nick Lidstrom that I've always loved, I mean, he is going to go down as arguably the greatest defenseman in the league. Sure, some people will say Bobby Orr, but he did have some of the greatest teammates anybody could ever ask for in a career. I mean,
that he made better.
That's right. But you're talking Fedorov, Hasek, Modano, Chelios, Shanahan, Yzerman, Dino, Hull, Robitaille, Coffey, Larionov. The list goes on and on and on. It was the perfect situation.
Gentlemen, Brandon, don't forget that Paul Coffey's on that list, too, the greatest ever.
Making the other players better is the definition of the perfect man.
Hey, can I ask
that,
you?
Lastly,
I want to ask you guys another question, especially you, Denny, with this one, because I heard you guys, I think it was the last podcast you guys did, and there was a debate over who was the best at a position, and I think Bobby brought up, you know, well, it's kind of, there's more teams now, you have more people are into the sport. When you're comparing generations like that, does more teams, do you give that more validity, or less teams because you're facing the best players all the time?
I think more teams is less talent. It's not as deep. So fewer teams, the talent's deeper. It makes sense. If you only got eight, when I first got in the big leagues, there were eight teams in each league. Eight, that's all, 16 teams total. Then they went to 12, I think they went to 12. And then, of course, you started to see a little bit of water down. But then they let it catch up where the talent was just as equal as it was when there was only eight teams. And then from then, exponentially, now they have all these other teams in there. And you know, as we all know, they go through some soft times right now because a lot of kids go to other sports.
Mm-hmm.
The taller kids wind up playing some basketball. They do play some hockey. And you know what else? The world of golf has taken a lot of good athletes away. And golfers normally are pretty good athletes.
Yeah, Denny, I disagree with you in one sense.
Thanks, Bob.
You have a lot more teams in baseball now, but the talent level is as good or better than ever. And here's why.
The
rise of the Latin player. Latinos saved Major League Baseball.
Oh, I don't think it saved Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball wasn't going anywhere. It certainly kept Major League Baseball at a level that we needed it to be kept at, all right? But the guys who led the parade were Maguire and all of those guys who started hitting home runs in the early 90s. That's what saved the game of baseball at that point in time.
Until we found out they were all on steroids, yes.
So steroids saved the game of baseball.
Steroids and lots of home runs.
Good, let's bring it back.
Listen, I have no problem if everybody can do it.
Let's not.
Why not, Bob?
All performance-enhancing drugs.
You know, this is what Mark
thinks. Performance-enhancing drugs. Everyone should take them.
Performance-enhancing drugs should be legal in baseball. Mark thinks they should let guys take steroids.
Why not?
I don't know. Well, you know what? I agree with that, but it sends the wrong message to the kids who are still kids. And I just don't want anything to reflect profoundly badly on kids.
That's a fair argument.
Sorry.
That's a fair argument. But if any other business, you could take a performance-enhancing drug for the most part.
Sure, of course, but you don't have to go up against a 101-mile-an-hour fastball either.
Which is on performance-enhancing drugs.
And you need to get out of the way. Sometimes you need to get out of the way.
Hey, Mark, really, I thought you did a very nice job today.
Good job, Mark.
We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I'll be better next time Eli goes on a jaunt.
Let me ask you this. Can you take bobsleighs next week?
We'll see if that Skype's broken.
See you later, Bobby.
This show would flounder without me, Danny.
Oh, yeah. Flounder. That's a fish, Bob.